What I would like to do now is today and in our next class cover what I would call a catechism of Catholic morality. A mini catechism of Catholic morality. I have here 39 questions. So we'll cover about 20, hopefully, today. What I'll do is first read the question. The light is over there. Thank you. Is it all right? In each case, I will read the question and then read the answer and then make a brief comment because, of course, these few questions we have here in our study of theology may be up to 4 years, 2 semesters each year on the contents of what we will synthesize in about 40 questions. Question number one. What are the moral virtues? The moral virtues are the infused or acquired habits of good conduct. The moral virtues are the infused or acquired habits of good conduct. You see immediately. There are two kinds of virtues that we as Catholics believe in. The theological virtues of faith, hope, and charity, and the cardinal virtues of prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. However, in the question we've just asked ourselves, we are distinguishing between two kinds of moral virtues. Of moral virtues, the infused or required. In other words, the four major or principal moral virtues are, to repeat, prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. However, those same four virtues we can look at from two different perspectives. We can see them either as morally good habits acquired by the repetition of the act. In general, an acquired habit is something which is acquired by repeating a given action. If the action is a good action, and by repeating that good act, you acquire the habit, then it's called a virtue. If, however, the action you perform is morally bad, and repeating the morally bad act, you acquire a bad habit, then that bad habit is called a vice. That is, you might see the ABCs of our vocabulary. The four moral virtues, therefore, can be seen both as infused, received when we are baptized. They can also be seen as morally good habits, which are acquired by repeating the action, which then develops the good habit. Question number two. How do the moral virtues differ from the theological virtues? The moral virtues are directly related to our human conduct, either by ourselves or with other persons, period. The theological virtues are directly related to God. I'll repeat if you don't mind. How do the moral virtues differ from the theological virtues? The moral virtues are directly related to our human conduct by ourselves or with other persons. The theological virtues are directly related to God. Any single good action we perform, for example, you're attending class here, I believe, is pleasing to God and is a good action. And whether you realize it or not, you are gaining merit by patiently sitting here, listening to this sinner talk about virtue. So that any action we perform may involve many virtues. However, over the centuries, even before Christ, the great philosophers, among the Greeks especially, and since the coming of Christ, the Christian, both philosophers and theologians, have distinguished on two levels. Distinguished an action from a virtue. An action is whatever we do. And it's called a human action when what we do is performed with the mind being aware of what we're doing and the will choosing to do it. So a human action is whatever action I perform, whether morally good or bad, in which my mind is aware of what I am doing and my will chooses to perform that action. A virtue, on the other hand, is a power, as I think we've said even more than once. There are two principal words in the Latin language for power, potentia and virtus. Potentia, P-O-T-E-N-T-I-A, potentia. Potentia is the power of irrational nature. The power of a storm at sea. The power of a strong wind. The power of a volcano. The power of lightning. And the power of a strong motor, say, in an automobile. That's potentia. But rational beings, human beings, have virtues, from which our English word virtue, of course, is derived. Virtue, therefore, means power. What kind of a power? The power of a human being, either a power of the mind or a power of the will. The power to do what either the mind or the will are capable of doing. And because it is the power of doing something good, a virtue is the power which enables us to do what is good, pleasing to God. And remember, if anybody ever asks you, what is good? What's a good action? A simple but profound answer is, that is good which leads us to our final destiny. That is good which leads us to heaven. What's bad? Well, the opposite. Now, the power then to perform good actions that lead us to heaven are called virtues. But then, as we've just indicated, the church distinguishes two kinds of powers that we have. Powers that are directly related to God and power that are rather related to our moral conduct. Those related to God are called theological virtues. Of course, from the Greek, theos, God. And they are faith, hope, and charity. Faith is a power of the mind. The power of the mind to know what the mind would never, never know, except that God had revealed it. As believing Christians, we have a power of a mind. Now, those who are unbelievers, no matter how intelligent they may be, no matter how many degrees they may have behind their names, they are compared with a child of six that has the faith. Those geniuses are idiots. And I use the word deliberately. They are idiots. And the worst threat to our nation is the number of intellectual idiots we've got. And our universities keep producing, pardon me, more of them every year. I sure hope I will get away with that last statement. The theological virtues, therefore, for the mind, first faith, to know what God has revealed. Then in the will, the virtues of hope and of love. Of hope, to trust that God will give us what He promised. What did He promise? All the grace we need in this life to reach heaven. And the promise of heaven, provided we do His will. And the more hopeless situations become, the better. Because then, finally at long last, the Lord says, "Well, it's about time you woke up. You thought you could make it on your own. Silly, you need me." Hope, of course, is trusting that God will give us what He promised. And then the virtue of charity for the will, loving God, the power to love God above all things, including the one thing, should I call it a thing, that's the dearest, most precious, most loving, most, dare I say, adorable being on earth, who just happens to have our name. To love God above everything, especially above the one thing which is always in competition with God, our own self-will. And the power, and what power we need, to love others. To love others out of love for God. And not, however, the word love has been, dare I say, misused. I could use stronger verbs. Oh, love, how many crimes have been committed in your name? The love, which is the virtue of charity and practice, enables us to love others, not because they are lovable in themselves, but because we get anything that we like in return from them. We may get nothing but criticism, dislike, opposition, even open hatred from others. Are we to love those who hate us? Yes. That's why I'm so happy that in my faith and what I believe I have, the virtue of charity, I can love Hans Kern. I can love the heretics. I love a man like Father Richard McBrien of Notre Dame University. I love him. Of course, I keep praying for his conversion. But then the moral virtues about which we're talking, give us the power First for the mind, last prudence, and then three virtues for the will: justice, fortitude, and temperance. Question number three. How do we get the moral virtues? We get the moral virtues either by infusion at baptism and by acquiring them through repeating good moral acts and thus acquiring good moral habits. In the language of psychology, the only meaning that psychology has for the word habit is an acquired habit, something which by repeating a given action then becomes, as we say, habitual. We do something once, there's a slight urge to do it again. We do it five times, there's a stronger urge to do it the sixth time. By the time we've done something 100 times, we've got to do positive violence to ourselves not to do it the 101st time. I did tell you, didn't I, when my teachers, when I was in high school, told us about how important it is not to acquire bad habits? I tell you?
No.
You remember? The heavy word H-A-B-I-T on the board? Can I write on the board?
Yes, sir.
All I need is chalk. Well, I doubt if there's any around. Did you find some? Don't worry, I'll just write in the air. H-A-B-I-T. He was a brother of the Society of Mary who told us, fellas, don't acquire bad habits because they're very hard to get rid of. Thank you. You get a bad habit, you work at it, and you still have a bit. Didn't I tell you this? And you work harder, and you struggle, and you pray, and you get rid of some of it, but you still have a bit. You work still harder, and you pray, and you struggle, and you still have it. In psychology, the only meaning of habit is something which is acquired by the repetition of an act. But the moral virtues, as we've just said, are first of all infused. When we are baptized, along with the infusion of the virtues of faith, hope, and charity, God pours in. That's what infused means. Fundere in Latin means to pour. Infundere means to pour in. God pours into our souls at baptism the virtues first of faith, hope, and charity, and then also the moral virtues. So the moral virtues are infused already at baptism as powers. Those who are not baptized can acquire the habit by the repetition of the action of that habit. But our Catholic faith teaches us that nobody, whether baptized or not, can acquire a good moral habit without the help of God's grace. And thus we know there are, for example, before the time of Christ, some outstanding non-Christian philosophers, men like Plato or Aristotle. And the world today, take a man like Mahatma Gandhi, a great man by any human estimate. And the Jesuit tried for 15 years to bring Mahatma Gandhi into the church. Taught him by the hour. But he had been so embedded in Hinduism that he just could not bring himself to think that all religions are basically and equally good. That is why the New Age movement is so devastating, because it's an importation mainly from India. And one religion is as good as another. Truth, Mahatma Gandhi declared, truth is what we keep looking for all our lifetime and never fully reach. In any case, people can be morally good, even have good moral habits. And I repeat, either through baptism or though repetition of a good act can acquire the habit, nevertheless, grace must be at work. Question number 4. Can we perform good moral acts naturally without the help of divine grace? Well, I really answered the question. Yes, absolutely speaking, we can perform good moral actions without the help of divine grace. Why? Because we have a free will, which is, and watch it, our will is not, as Luther kept repeating, our nature is not depraved, it is deprived. And one letter spells the difference between Catholicism and world Protestantism. Our nature is deprived, it lacks much of what it had before the fall, but it is not depraved. We do have a free will. We do have a mind that can think. We can rationally conclude to the existence of God without divine revelation. We have a free will. However, and not only the sin of our first parents, but even as original sin darkened the mind and weakened the will of all human beings, except two, about whom we're absolutely sure, did not have a fallen human nature, and be Christ and His Blessed Mother. Sin, therefore, originally, or shall we say, have originally, from the very beginning, darkened the minds of all human beings and weakened their wills. But over the centuries, sin continues to darken the mind and weaken the will. On the most granite foundations of good psychology, every sin we commit darkens our intellect. Every sin we commit weakens our wills. That's why, having finished, as I've told you, my own graduate studies in psychology and in teaching the subject to others, this is good psychology, enlightened, of course, by the faith. It just make sense not to commit sin. Otherwise, every sin you commit, your mind is darkened and your will is weakened. Question number 5. Can we acquire moral virtues without divine grace? We've said this before. No. No. To acquire the moral virtues as good moral habits, we need divine grace. Now listen. We need divine grace either as sanctifying grace, which is received at baptism, or as actual graces from God. A newly baptized child, maybe 3 days old, as I was, so I was told, 3 days old when I was baptized. And I can prove it. I've got the baptismal certificate. That child's mind has powers of intelligence that an unbaptized infant does not possess. And I can prove it. My first assignment after I came back from my graduate studies in theology after ordination in Rome, my first assignment was to a school for retarded girls from 6 to 16 chronological age. I served for about 4 months, then went to teach in our Jesuit School of Theology. Over the years, I've kept in very close contact with the community. They have a school for retarded children in Northfield, Michigan. I spent Holy Week this year giving them classes and then Holy Week services, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday. By the age of 16, some sooner, but for most of them it took to about the age of 16 to reach the mental age of 6. Up to 10 years, day after day, of training, of teaching. I work with those children. My job, of course, was priest. I counsel them. I hear their confessions. And, of course, I had to spend the whole afternoon hearing confessions. Well, I can tell you, those children, though the mental chronological age may have been, say, less than 6, but what a term. Their supernatural age was way beyond their chronological years. The insight those children had into who God is. Oh, to listen to those children tell you how they love Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. To watch those children on their knees before the tabernacle. Do you know what I'm saying? Oh, how misled we can be by so much learned jargon. The primary grace that we receive at baptism is enlightenment of the mind. And so with the moral virtues, we acquire the virtue of prudence the moment we're baptized. Or, and, if these moral virtues, mind you, not actions, In other words, there's an article of the Catholic faith. We cannot just naturally acquire any moral virtue. Theologically, that's a contradiction in terms. We need divine grace. Either, as I've said, through the sacrament of baptism, which confers sanctifying grace, or through the actual graces that God gives us once we reach the age of reason. Number 6. What are the cardinal moral virtues? As I think we've said before, cardinal means principal, because cardines in Latin means hinges. What then are the 4 principal moral virtues on which 4 all the other virtues depend, or, if you wish, on which they hinge? Cardinal means. The cardinal moral virtues are those from which all the other moral virtues derive. You name them all a virtue. Everyone somehow belongs to, is part of, or comes from these 4. They are, as we've just said, cardinal, because on them all the other moral virtues totally depend. Number 7. What then are these virtues? May our prudence in the mind, and justice, fortitude, and temperance in the will. May our prudence in the mind, and justice, fortitude, and temperance in the will. During our studies in theology before ordination, each of us is told to give 1 class to all the then Jesuits studying theology. And I was asked to teach my fellow Jesuits the virtue of prudence. Back then, before my ordination, I found out that while prudence can be more or less acquired, but as a virtue, you must have divine grace. And there is no single virtue in the moral order that is more fundamental than prudence. Indeed, prudence is called the queen of the virtues. Regina virtutum, the queen of the virtues. Prudence then corresponds in the moral order to faith in the theological order. Just as faith is the infused theological virtue for the mind to believe everything which God has revealed, so prudence is the moral virtue which enables us to judge how are we to act. So then, number 8 is what else? What is the virtue of prudence? And mainly because of its importance, I have 5 definitions of prudence. I thought I'd stop at 5. Each is a good definition, but from different perspectives, to help, hopefully, to understand what prudence is. First, prudence is correct knowledge about things to be done. Prudence is correct knowledge about things to be done. I know I'm supposed to do something. So I know I'm supposed to do something, and I want to do it. Oh, but my friend, you better know how to do it. My wives have told me. I've said this more than once. Men, pardon me, men are the dreamers. Women are the realists. There just could not have been a Miss Shakespeare. Couldn't. She said, husband, grand plans. Wife says, but honey, where did we get the money? Prudence, I repeat, is correct knowledge about things to be done. And there's a lot we have to know how something should be done. Another definition. Prudence is the knowledge of things that ought to be done and of things that ought to be avoided. Prudence is the knowledge of things that ought to be done and the knowledge of things that ought to be avoided. Oh, the prudence it takes to even survive, not to say grow, in our Catholic faith today. Sheer, infantile prudence. If you want to keep your Catholic faith intact, you just do not expose your mind indiscriminately to what the modern media are so colorfully and melodiously and attractively and seductively offering for our intake. Prudence, therefore, is knowledge not only of what should be done, but also of what should be avoided. Good people, generous people, but they will lack the prudence of what should be done and what should not be done. And the same thing that should be done, say in the morning, should not be done in the evening. Or the same thing that should be done in the presence of one person, you just do not do in the presence of another person. Certain words you just do not use in the presence of certain people. A third definition. Prudence is the virtue of the intellect by which a human being recognizes in any matter at hand what is good and what is evil. Prudence is the virtue of the intellect by which a human being recognizes in any matter at hand what is good and what is evil. And let me tell you, it takes extraordinary grace to exercise prudence, especially because we're so constantly being seduced by the evil spirit. And there's one tactic of the devil that has been phenomenally successful over the centuries. It is presenting what is evil under the guise of what is good. The AIDS epidemic. We talk to doctors who know their field. They tell me, what the media tell us about AIDS is only 0.1% of the truth. A devastating disease. And what has AIDS become? AIDS has become the ground for compassion. Now, of course, as when the catechism comes out, you will read, yes, we are not God forbid, hate the people who are afflicted. You're to love them. You're to have compassion. But prudence dictates that we recognize the source of the evil, which is the sin of sodomy. Prudence, therefore, enables us to recognize in any situation, any matter at hand. And let me tell you, you've got to be prudent constantly. When I'm speaking, especially when I'm being taped, that's why I pray, partly that all of us may obtain from God the grace we need to understand what He wants to tell us, but from myself, Lord, that I may be prudent, may see what needs to be said and not see what should not be said. Only He knows, only He knows your minds, only He knows them. I don't. Only He knows what you need to be told. I don't. But I ask for light, so I may say what He knows you should be taught. And this is all day, every day, the exercise of prudence. We go on. Our fourth definition. Prudence is the moral virtue which enables us to decide, choose, and prepare suitable means for the attainment of any good purpose or the avoidance of any evil. Prudence is the moral virtue which enables us to decide, to choose, and prepare suitable means for the attainment of any good purpose or the avoidance of any evil. I promised, and I pray the Lord would make it possible, I get back here in time for class at 1:30. Anything could have happened. Traffic jam, plane delayed, or something might have happened to, well, poor Father Hardin. But I have to be prudent. Certain things that I would like to have done this morning for the men making the retreat, I apologize. Couldn't do it. Had them get up a half an hour earlier. Everything we do, notice the exercise of prudence, first to decide, it's our mind, then to choose, but the will, remember, is a blind faculty. As we first make decisions, hear it, we can never make a wise choice. Let me say it again. Unless we make wise decisions with our minds, we can never make wise choices with our will. It is one reason why over the years I tell people this is elementary prudence. Write at WRITE. And after that is an exclamation mark. It's the imperative of the verb. Write. Do some writing if you want to, well, grow in and even preserve the prudence you've got. I'm to call someone up. I don't just pick up the telephone and talk, come and talk. I think I've told you over the years, depending on who's calling, and this is systematic. Another party Can I give you a blessing? Oh, Father, not yet. So another minute. How about a blessing? Oh, Father, another minute. Then, I don't ask. I give the blessing. I cannot exaggerate the importance of the next two sentences. We've said them before, but they are part of the virtue of prudence. We can talk without thinking. We cannot write without thinking. And this is really what prudence is, to think. Think before we act. And depending on the gravity of the action, on its importance, we will think either more or more deeply or in always accompany our thinking with prayer. And there are decisions that over the years I never think of making except before the Blessed Sacrament.